The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Everything we do is under fire. Elon Musk sits on Twitter every day, or X today, saying like, we are the media. You are the media. My message to Elon Musk is bullshit. You're not the media. You having a blue check mark, a Twitter handle, and 300 words of cleverness doesn't make you a reporter any more than me looking at your head and seeing that you have a brain and telling you have an awesome set of tools makes me a neurosurgeon, right? Like what we do, what journalists do, what you did in Mississippi, what Al Jazeera does in the Middle East. You proclaim yourself to be a reporter? Like that's nonsense. Like being a reporter's hard. Really hard. You have to care. You have to do the hard work. You have to get up every single day and say, I want to get to the closest approximation of the truth without any fear, without any favoritism. You don't do that by popping off on Twitter. You don't do that by having an opinion. You do it by doing the hard work.
Yeah, come on, slow clap, everybody. Whoa. First of all, I've got to say, extraordinary content. It needed to be said.
Yeah.
It continues to need to be said. When all of the garbage is flying around on social media, lying about reporters, lying about the hard work they do, lying about the hard work editors do, lying about everything up and down about not only their alternative set of facts, but alternative set of facts about what people like you do.
Okay, Elon Musk definitely has to buy MSNBC now. The sitting ovation for the Axios guy who just melted down. Finally, someone comes forward to defend the fake news, to defend all the fake and false narratives, the Steele dossier, the Trump-Russia collusion hoax, the election steal, the Fedsurrection, and on it goes. Just a few weeks ago, they were calling Trump Hitler. Before Morning Joe went and kissed Donald Trump's ring at Mar-a-Lago, you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Thanksgiving week, busy weekend, I should say. Tiring weekend. We had our big Thanksgiving ball last night. And then class early this morning. It came very early. So lots of clips, though, prepared for today to make it just a little bit easier for yours truly. In any event, you can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. All of these alternative sources for news, and you can see why. I mean, they're sitting, they tell you that they're no longer journalists. They're just like clapping seals. Just clap. Where's the journalism? Where's the news analysis in that? Their commentary is that finally someone has said we're perfect. No, you've been saying that for who knows how long. And people don't believe it. They're not buying it. I like how they showed the thumbnail of Elon Musk smiling, grinning ear to ear, because that's probably what he did when he saw this clip. This Axios guy. No, they're not journalists. We are journalists. We do the hard work. We care. Okay. You care, right? These people are flip-flopping like fish out of water. The clapping seals, a sitting ovation for the guy who just loses it, just melts down. If they had 1 ounce of contrition, just 1 ounce, their audience probably would return. As it is, they've lost, some of their shows have lost 50% of their audience since the election. The American people have spoken in more ways than one. They're fed up. At least the ones who don't live, you know, in the Northeast and on the West Coast. Outside of that, they're fed up. And you've got people, and you've got Elon Musk, whether he's trolling or not, he's out there saying, yeah, how much is MSNBC going to be sold for? Listen to this exchange. I think this was over at, MSNBC, clip 9.
But elaborate on that potential joke. He used some of the same phrasing right. that he used a few years ago when he ended up actually buying Twitter, when he said, how much is it? Just fairly casually. Yes. I mean, it would seem that, yes, there is a fair amount of trolling going on right now. But at the same time, Comcast is cleaving off a part of the business that could potentially be an affordable acquisition. Do you think that there's any possibility that it's more than a joke?
Well, some inside MSNBC are taking Musk's comments seriously, whether he's trolling or not. There is a serious undercurrent to this, and it is the following. In some countries where we've seen democratic backsliding, where some oppositional media outlets have been captured by the government, a process known as media capture, this is exactly what happens. A ally of the leader, like Musk, comes in and buys a media outlet that is viewed as oppositional, and then he turns the content and makes it more friendly to the person in power. That has happened before in other countries. That's part of the concern when, even if Elon Musk is just joking, that's part of the concern here when it comes to MSNBC. But at the moment, this spinoff that Comcast is doing will take at least a year to complete. There's no immediate sale or any of that, I'm told, that is planned. But the idea that Musk talks about it, he likes to say the most ironic outcome is the most likely. And in this case, it would be pretty ironic if he controlled MSNBC.
It would actually be hilarious if he controlled MSNBC. If he comes in and he says, all right, morning meltdown, you guys are out. Actually, Sam and I were talking this morning saying that he should come in and say, no. Morning meltdown provides us with daily comedy gold. You guys, you're staying in your jobs. You can keep your job as the morning propagandist. Over at, he might even suggest that they put, instead of 9 people on the split screens, maybe 15 or 20, and just turn them all on and just let them go. Just let them grunt, let them laugh, let them cough under the cover, let them do whatever they want. It does provide for some levity from time to time. Where is the journalism? Where's the news reporting? It's gone. It's gone. And of course, they would say, well, it's the same over at Fox News, especially with the opinion ones at night. And that's true. That's true. But where would we be without alternative sources for news? This is why they're enraged, because they've lost control. You know, I've got these articles from Axios, by the way, and also from Politico. Over the weekend, where they're talking about how that this time around, I mean, Trump's coming in with confidence. He's coming in to make change. And the deep state, they don't use those words, but basically they're saying the deep state, they don't have the punch that they used to. But just coming back to Elon Musk, he's public enemy number 2, right behind the bad orange man. This was before the election. He's campaigning for President Trump in somewhere in Pennsylvania. And as you know, he's now coming in over this Department of Governmental Efficiency, DOGE. Listen to him talk about government over-regulation with respect to his SpaceX operation. It's right there in the southern tip of Texas. On the coast there of the Gulf of Mexico. And listen to what the government authorities had his company do before they could launch any of those space capsules or booster rockets. Clip 6.
SpaceX had to do the study to see if Starship would hit a shark. And I'm like, it's a big ocean, you know. You know, this is, I think, from National Marine Fisheries, one of the, we said, okay, fine, we'll do the analysis, and then, well, can you give us the shark data? They're like, no, we can't give you the shark data. We're like, okay, well, then we're in a bit of a quandary. How do we solve this shark probability issue? And they said, well, we could give it to our Western division, but we don't trust them. And I'm like, am I in a comedy sketch here? That, like, they're worried about the people who hunt sharks for shark fins somehow getting their hands on this shark dense, the shark data. And so eventually, I think we got the data and we could, you know, run the analysis to say, like, yeah, the sharks are going to be fine. And then we thought, okay, well, now we're done. And they said, but what about whales? I'm like, when you look at a picture of the Pacific, what percentage of the surface area of the Pacific do you see as whale? And honestly, if the ship did hit a whale, it's like, honestly, that whale had it coming, because it's like the odds are so low, you know, it's like Final Destination, the whale edition. It's like fate had it in for that whale, you know. And so we have to do the whale analysis. And it's like, okay, yeah, the whales will be fine too. Yeah. Anyway, just one like crazy thing after another where, you know, so this is why I'm really feeling the pain of the overregulation.
Isn't it amazing how much government corruption and waste is being exposed? This was in October. This is probably before he knew he was going to be overseeing with Vivek that government efficiency project that's to go on for a year and a half until the nation's 250th birthday. But if you go back to my father's point in Great Again, he says that Donald Trump, I mean, one thing he does really well is he sees the evil, and what he exposed is the evil of the deep state, all of these evildoers that were plotting and scheming to try to take him out, to destroy his presidency. I mean, but that's just one layer of the corruption. Now, as you see there, I mean, this is a guy, Elon Musk is not going to come into his office or his position helping Donald Trump without any prior experience. Look at what he's been dealing with. This is insane. Well, what about the sharks? How about the whales? If some debris falls into the ocean, how can you be sure? Well, what are the percentages that you'll hit a shark? And then the infighting. We'll give it to the Western office, but you know, they're incompetent. We don't like them. This is exactly what he's been charged to come in and eliminate. Now, to what degree they'll succeed in that, we'll soon find out. But the team that's being assembled, and, you know, Axios has another piece that points out, and I think correctly so, that this is not a team loaded with staunch conservatives. It's a broad coalition, politically speaking. But the specialty that Musk has, or Bobby Kennedy has, or Tulsi Gabbard, it's exposing a lot of evil, a lot of corruption, and a ton of government waste. How did we get to this point? And it's been made so much worse just since COVID, because that's when they started spending like $2 trillion more per year, and we've never dialed it back. Not once. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger. They keep adding more and more regulations, all of these technocrats, these bureaucrats that think they know so much. And then along comes Donald Trump and, of course, Elon Musk, one of the most successful men in history, business-wise. These individuals, they actually deal with these government bureaucrats on a regular basis. Donald Trump, remember in those debates back in 2016, where he said, I know the system, I know how it works, because I've been playing it as well. Same with Hillary's people. They all know. They know how it works. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You pay. I just saw one of the senators in Oklahoma, not Lankford, I forget the guy's name, the other one, but just how much his net worth has skyrocketed since he went off to the swamp, D.C. You look at some, as I mentioned last week, you look at some of these bright red states, it's amazing how they're still able to turn out rhinos, you know, Republicans in name only, whether it's Oklahoma or Texas or Utah, they're all over the place. I mean, the swamp, the deep state, as I often say, it runs deep. That said, as I pointed out last week, obviously God's giving special favor to that Jeroboam administration. And, you know, there's been, I guess they released a comment yesterday or over the weekend that they're not going to give blanket immunity or pardons, I guess I should say, to the January 6th protesters. And that has quite a few people in the MAGA movement upset. But they're, you know, they're strategizing. How can we use the political capital that we have now to make sure we get Tulsi Gabbard through, to make sure we get Hegseth through, and so on? Because there's always resistance. There's always fighting. There's always politically motivated stunts. It's just a sick system through and through. I mean, we comment on it. We give you commentary. It's refreshing to see government waste and corruption exposed, for sure. But you also step back, as I was saying in class this morning, you look at the bigger picture and you think, how can this sickness from head to toe be thoroughly and completely healed? And the answer is, we got to be honest, it's not going to be. There's going to be a short run of a resurgence, as we've said. But we better brace ourselves. I mean, we are at we're at 2 Timothy 3, where we're seeing human nature in all of its ugly colors. It's just everywhere. The human heart is on display. The story in New York, there's like a knife attacker in it. He's been in and out of jail, and then they let him go. Hochul and Adams, all those good lefties. We got to let him out. We got to let him roam. I mean, he's reformed, this homeless guy. I know he has a long history of stabbing people. So he gets out and he stabs 3 people to death. Imagine living under a government that treats its citizens like that. It's real. It's happening. The man should have never been on the streets. But the leadership, the government lets him out, and he goes right on killing and murdering. And then we go right back to pretending like, well, it's normal. There's crime everywhere. And oh, by the way, I mean, just among our citizens, the percentages of crime, it's higher than for the illegals. So let the illegals into. That's the way they reason. There's a woman, a mother in Georgia, who was arrested. She lives in a small town in Georgia. And even then, I probably wouldn't send my 10-year-old down the road on his own. But it's a rural community. So she sends her 10-year-old to the store and back. I guess the store owner, somebody, turn them in. And the police show up. They arrest the mom. She could go to jail for a year because she was reckless. She endangered her 10-year-old. So here come the authorities. Meanwhile, as someone noted on Twitter, you've got 300,000 children who have disappeared in America. You've got children by the tens of thousands crossing into America at the southern border on their own. No parental supervision. No, just the coyotes turning them loose. It's such an easy pickup for local law enforcement. Oh, thank you. Thank you, sir. Yeah, we'll go show up and arrest this woman. Why don't you do a little more investigating, you know, some deeper investigating, and find young people in Georgia, oh yes, that are being sex trafficked, and go after the adults responsible for that. It's just like the January 6th investigation. How easy it is. You waltz into the Capitol, the police usher you in, you look around, in the case of one individual, forget his name, then the police say, all right, it's time to go, and then he obediently and respectfully leaves, and he's arrested and sent to prison for 3 years. And now he's out now. He put in his time. But he lives his life with that felony charge hanging over his head. You can see why a lot of people are upset at the grave injustice. coming out from the Justice Department. They're hoping that Donald Trump comes in and just gives the blanket pardon to everybody. But you can't do that because, again, there's got to be political, you know, tug of war. We've got to make sure we please Lisa Murkowski. Got to get her vote to send on through Tulsi Gabbard and RFK. What a system. I mean, the founders did their best to make sure that the different branches of government kept the others in check. But now look at where we are. What happens when you just let human nature run its course? What happens when you turn into a country that's no longer religious or moral? Those were the underpinnings of this American experiment. The founders told us that. You better be a moral people. You better look to the Bible. You better be religious. Otherwise, human nature is going to run its course. And that's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing. All of this inefficiency, this waste, this corruption, this supersized government that just has gotten massive in the last 3-4 years. Listen to Maria from yesterday talking about the Department of Education. It could soon be the Department of Deducation because they want to get rid of it. This is clip 7.
But look at this. The U.S. spent more than $878 billion on kindergarten through 12 education last year. And this is what we've gotten. American children have fallen significantly behind other countries. We rank 9th in reading, 34th in math, and 16th in science.
16th in science? What did she say in math? Well, they've all plummeted. 34th in math. And all of this money that goes to the DOE every year, what is it, $230 billion? As I said last week, most people can't even tell you what the Department of Education is doing, except enforcing wokeness on our schools. This is more from Maria, I think yesterday, clip 8.
Yeah, it's interesting that you just said Obama's Secretary of Education. The indoctrination and the weaponization of the educational system is exactly what we have seen over the last 4 years. You know, the DEI, the wokeness that's been pushed onto kids from their teachers. You know, if you go back, and this has been the tried and true saying and adage of what's happened in education, is education starts in the home. It doesn't start with the federal government. And I think altogether pushing this back to the states in the appropriate manner is altogether what we need to do. Things need to stay local. We really need to push back for education in the home, get fathers back in the home and those type of things. Then we will see the education scores in every different segment. We'll see them rise up, not from because of federal government intervention.
Well, he's completely right about that. But how much success do you think that strategy would have? That if you go back to our church literature, what we've written years ago, in some cases, about child rearing and putting off, you know, kindergarten or first, instead of trying to get them into preschool as soon as possible, extending that period where they're home before they go off to grade school so that they have more time with the parents, so that the parents can reinforce the principle, the law of obedience first and foremost, so that they can go to school and actually learn something and they're not just bouncing off the walls and then given Ritalin and all the things that society does to try to fix the problem. Just pop a pill. We've made this point with respect to the food industry, big pharma, and how they're all in bed together. Put the addictive drugs and pesticides in the foods, get them addicted to junk, get them sick, and then turn them over to big pharma for the pill to just kind of keep the sickness at bay. What a system. That's very swampy. Jesse Waters on his program Friday, he talked about the disappointment in the Trump camp after Matt Gaetz stepped aside. And he made a pretty simple point, but skip ahead to clip 3.
Trump got some pretty bad news this week, and he didn't react like a dictator. The Senate wasn't going to confirm Matt Gaetz. So did Trump thrash about and dissolve the Senate? No. He respected the check and balance and picked a new attorney general. Not something Hitler would have done.
That's right. Hitler didn't just go in. It was within hours. Trump said, okay, I'll select someone else, Pam Bondi. Well, where's all the, you know, you go back to that cold open. The guy screaming there, we're journalists because we care and we work hard. Where are the apologies? For Hitler, they just come out, they go kiss his ring, or Millie says that, yeah, I think we'll be okay. You just said he was a fascist. Hitler would have dissolved Congress and said, nope, we're going with Matt Gaetz, sorry. And then they wonder why they can't hold on to their viewers. Jesse was talking about just the tremendous need for reform. You see it in every single agency, as I say. Listen to what he said about the FBI and the DOJ. This is clip 4.
We need the FBI and the DOJ to stop criminals and terrorists, not go through the First Lady's underwear drawer. It'd also be nice to tighten up some of the agency's spending. You ready? Whistleblower says the FBI blew your money on stupid little office activities like a painting class where agents could get to know colleagues and unleash their creativity. Oh, and they also did office yoga. Not sure why they just can't stretch on their free time. And there was lunch and coloring. They described it as a fun series of coloring sessions during lunch that you will get to see your colleagues' artistic sides. Elon, we found some government waste there. Trump's FBI director is going to have their work cut out for him. And so is every other person Trump picks. Trump wants to radically transform the government. It's what he campaigned on. It's what Americans voted for. In 2016, his agenda got swallowed up by D.C. bureaucrats and rabid Democrats. But Politico reports all the forces that were coming for him have been kind of defanged and obliterated. This time it feels like Trump found his footing in Washington and has his people around him. They believe in his plan. Reporters who've been covering Trump for a decade say after 2 assassination attempts, 4 indictments, and a landslide, Trump has a, quote, different sort of confidence and nerve.
That's pretty interesting and significant. And coming from Politico, the fact that the opposition, the Never Trump movement, it's been defanged. I'll get to that Politico story in just a bit, but just coming back to some of these nominees, he mentioned the FBI director, how that he'll have his work cut out for him. And you had Andy McCabe last week on the news channels talking about how great Mike Rogers would be, and then Trump comes out and says, I've never given one thought to that guy. And there's others saying that Kash Patel is in just a small number of being considered, of people being considered for that position. What an important position that will be. You talk about the efficiency, you know, agency. Tulsi Gabbard presiding over the intel. Huge. And then the AG, we've gone through that last week. I've wondered why the FBI appointment has taken longer than some of these others. But listen to Kash Patel. I think he's kind of trying to put his resume out there before Trump's people. This was on with Maria yesterday, clip 1.
So I was a lead investigator where he exposed the Russiagate crimes that Comey, McCabe, Strzok, and Page, and so many others committed. And we reported to Congress those oversight matters, and those were taken up through them in the right course to the American people. So if anyone has a complaint about that and questions my unwavering commitment to the Constitution, I'm happy to talk to them about it. I'm especially happy to talk to the media about it. But you can look at my record, and those calling me a danger, let's just ask them for a proof, a piece of evidence that actually shows I've committed any constitutional violations or any ethical quandaries, and I'd love to hear their response to this.
Yeah.
McCabe calling this guy, Kash Patel, a danger. How rich is that? What he did is he exposed McCabe. He exposed the real insurrection, the plot to destroy Donald Trump. Strzok, Page, Comey, Brennan, Clapper, all of them. He exposed the deep state. as I say, just coming back to that point in grade again, look at how much corruption and evil doing is being exposed. I went through that that Psalm 37, some of it, with you on Friday's show. We're just surrounded by evildoers and seeing so many exposed all at once. It just reveals the enormity of the problem that we're dealing with. How much of a dent can Musk and Vivek and perhaps this man, Cash, and others, how much of a dent can they even put in this level of corruption? Jesse talked about another agency desperately in need of new leadership, better leadership. This is clip two.
Next, Trump's going to shake up the FBI and the Secret Service. Former Secret Service agent Dan Bongino is being considered for director. Bongino's been very critical of the agency's top brass after Trump was almost assassinated twice over the summer. If Bongino gets in there, I guarantee you he's going to put an end to the cover-up and we'll finally find out what really happened in Butler and West Palm.
Well, that would be great to find out as well. Because Chris Wray and all of them, and the Secret Service Agency, they've just gone silent. A little bit of news right after July 13 and September 15, but after that, I mean, nothing. Nothing. And yet you still can't go a day practically without MSNBC mentioning Jan 6. The President of the United States was nearly assassinated twice in the last 4 or 5 months. He's now president-elect. He's coming back. And it's like that story was just brushed aside. No big deal. Tulsi Gabbard, the reason she's hated, even though she's a former Democrat, is she's been a pretty strong critic of U.S. intelligence operations. Listen to them on one of the networks talking about how dangerous she is. Clip 10.
Let's turn to the Democratic Congresswoman, former Democratic Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, who the president-elect tapped to serve as Director of National Intelligence. She's a critic of U.S. intelligence operations. She has promoted Russian propaganda. Your fellow Democrat, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, called her, quote, likely a Russian asset. Now, you and Tulsi Gabbard are both veterans. You served with her in the House. What do you think of her?
Well, I think she's compromised. I think by going to Syria and basically backing brutal dictator there, Russian-controlled media called her a Russian asset. So I do think that we have a real deep concern whether or not she's a compromised person. And frankly, the U.S. intelligence community has identified her as having troubling relationships with America's foes. And so my worry is that she couldn't pass a background check. And so she is, in terms of the intelligence community, very unqualified. Plus, she is potentially compromised and could be, and there are questions about whether or not she is now a Russian asset.
Do you believe that she could be a Russian asset?
I think that she is someone who is wholly backing and supportive of Putin, and I worry that she will not have America's best interests at heart.
Hot new take. She's a Russian agent. We've never heard that one before. We've been hearing it for 9 years. A Russian asset. So, therefore, she should not be. She should not be over the intel community. I mean, man, the woman has served her country. She's been one to stand up to corruption. And there you go. There's the CNN commentary. When we come back, I want to just take you through those messages. One Jesse alluded to there earlier. But the one from Politico on Friday, it says, he's still standing and everyone else is exhausted. Our insiders on how Trump has changed. Now just think about that for a moment as far as narratives go. You know, you had the Axios guy screaming at the top of the show about how perfect the legacy media is and how that you're not a journalist if you're just tweeting something every couple of hours. They were the ones promoting the fact that Trump is tired. He's exhausted. He's losing it. He's losing it mentally. Remember that? And here comes Politico. No, no. Actually, he's standing strong. And it's all of his opponents who are exhausted, who have been defanged, as Jesse noted there. We'll get to that. And also a Breitbart piece that refers to something Axios had to say. Pretty amazing developments, for sure. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Prosperity, government, trade, technology, stability, freedom. The last two centuries have been the exception in human history. How did we get here? The 19th century was dominated by an empire that exported civility, order, standards, and opened the doors for global trade. It ended slavery and implemented a system of governance that protected people's rights. And then in the 20th century, a new power came to dominate. Remarkably, one that would continue in the same traditions as its predecessor. For 200 years, the United States and Britain dominated the world stage. How did these two nations rise to prominence so suddenly? And why are their legacies so relentlessly attacked today? The astonishing truth is that your Bible prophesied the rise of Britain and the United States. It also prophesied their fall. The biblical identity of these two nations is the vital key that unlocks Bible prophecy. This lost master key to prophecy is revealed in Herbert W. Armstrong's most requested book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You must understand the biblical identities of these two nations to comprehend where we are in Bible prophecy today. To learn more about this vital truth, request your free copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Great. The master text, really, for Bible prophecy. If you don't have a copy of that, that's required reading, as far as we're concerned. Just call our operators today and request your free copy. I also should point out this little booklet, a companion to America Under Attack. We've told you so much, and we've said it so often. We've told you about this 200-plus page book that's been around, going back to the early years when it was a little booklet, 2013, I think it was. So this has been in circulation for well over 10 years, and now this is the newest. I mean, this one just came out. Telling you that this book is prophesied. It's actually talked about in the Bible. That's pretty amazing. So all of these, I mean, this one, the America Under Attack is prophesied, the book itself, and then as you heard right there in the promo, the United States and Britain in Prophecy, you see the incredible rise to power and prominence, how that it's all prophesied in the pages of your Bible. And then what we're seeing now, as I said in the first segment, happening in our nations, it's important to step back and consider the bigger picture here. Because for all of the good things that we see happening at the moment, the exposure of so much corruption and waste and inefficiency and evil doing and treason, the exposure of all this and the small improvements that might be made. But again, step back and consider, like you heard there in that promo, how did we get here? How did we get to where we are at this moment? This is from the Times in the UK. Trump came out recently and said that on day one, he's going to ban transgenders from the military, which is a good thing, for sure. But just listen to this. An executive order could be signed as early as his first day back in the White House, which would force 15,000 people out of their posts. Donald Trump is planning an executive order that would lead to the removal of all transgender members of the U.S. military, defense sources say. 15,000? How did we end up with 15,000 transgenders in the military? I mean, that blows my mind. That would give me a meltdown. It's not just the bizarro swimmer that's stealing trophies away from actual women. 15,000 transgenders in the U.S. military. And yet people are going to look at that and say, well, what's wrong with that? That's perfectly normal. You think the founding fathers would have thought that was normal? You think they would have stood for that? Would they have tolerated that kind of bizarre, insane behavior? This is promoted by the top-tier leadership of the U.S. military. Has been for years. It's refreshing to see what effective leadership, patriotic leadership, can accomplish even on day one. But how did we get to this point? What are we watching here? Where will this end? What must God think as he looks down at the U.S. military and says, okay, 15,000 transgenders, I can live with that. This is a Politico piece that I mentioned in the first segment. Donald Trump, he's still standing and everyone fighting him. They're the ones worn out. They're the ones exhausted. Think of the dear leader. He's been silenced. He's disappeared. People are no longer swooning. And now you've got, there was another story in the stack. I didn't include it in my notes, but all of these people saying, you know, the vibe is, it's very similar. I think it was an exchange Ben Shapiro had with someone on Fox, just saying how the vibe is very similar to 2016 and 17 when Donald Trump shocked the world, and it seemed like back then there was something really newsworthy and significant happening every 30, 40 minutes of the news cycle. And he said it feels a lot like that now. Trump's coming back. And secretively, in their heart of hearts, if they can just keep Elon Musk from buying them, MSNBC must be rejoicing. Well, hopefully we'll get some of those viewers back because, you know, if we soften up a bit on Trump, if we don't call him Hitler anymore, maybe our ratings will go up again. It says here, to journalists who have studied Donald Trump longest, the second transition looks a whole lot different from 8 years ago. Donald Trump, unbridled and emboldened, his control of the Republican Party all but complete, canny about the mechanics of government in a way he was not 8 years back when his first election was such a shock, is headed again to the White House. But how exactly might this tour differ from the last tumultuous term? I mean, you read between the lines there and you basically see them admitting, last time, I mean, we had the deep state and the FBI, everybody ready to spy on him, to blow up the Russia collusion hoax, to run with the Steele dossier. I mean, we had a lot of guardrails in place to keep him from getting anything done. Now, you know, not so much. You wish they'd just come out and say it. It talks about these four commentators that contributed to this discussion at Politico. And it says here, Trump is Trump. Trump always has been, always will be, fractious, breakneck, unscripted. But after January 6th, oh, there it is, another mention. After January 6th, two failed assassination attempts, an array of prosecutions and convictions didn't stop him from getting reelected by a larger margin than the first time he won. He has, they say, these commentators, a different sort of confidence and nerve. This is what Jesse quoted. The GOP establishment is no longer so much trying to control him as he is testing the absolute limits of its willingness and ability to stand up to him. like I said last week, the tables have definitely turned, just like it says in Psalm 37. Sometimes you have to wait on God, but I mean, when God intervenes, wow. It says here, it's a moment that's in some sense reminiscent of points in his past that ultimately led to trouble for Trump. At least for now, though, barreling toward that what promises to be a contentious four or more years, the 45th and now 47th president is proceeding with an air of untouchability. He's untouchable now. Who could have imagined this? Further on, it quotes one of the commentators, he's daring Senate Republicans to go against him, but he's also daring the entire government apparatus to defy him. There's an audacity to all of it. And then it says, as you heard earlier, all the forces that were coming for him have been kind of defanged and obliterated. How did that happen? Who did it? Who's responsible for that? What once was so powerful, all-powerful in some respects, you don't mess with bureaucrats. Even if they're low-level, you know, the Vindman types. If he turns you in, I mean, you're getting impeached. Even if you're a duly elected president of the United States, watch out for Vindman. How did that deep state apparatus get defanged? What has happened? Well, I submit to you that there's a spiritual dimension to all of this, and that is very well explained in this book, America Under Attack. So request this one and also the companion booklet now, America Under Attack, was prophesied. It's actually discussed in your Bible over at Breitbart. Anti-Trump resistance movement facing post-election disillusionment with activism. They're disillusioned. It's unusually quiet when Donald Trump is succeeding. Why is that? Why so different from 2016, from 7-8 years ago? We'll see how long it holds. There's a Trump resistance being plotted in the, you know, the back channels, of course. But how could it be this quiet, this calm, just what, 50-some days before Donald Trump takes over the reins of control in Washington? And he wants to get his guys in there as fast as possible. And he wants to kick out those executive actions as fast as possible. Seal the border. Start deporting people. Building bigger detention facilities. I mean, all of that's in discussion right now. And what happens when those federal agencies actually get the support of local law enforcement that begins to go after the sex traffickers abusing children? And not the single mom that's telling her 10-year-old boy, hey, can you run to the store down the street and then bring some eggs back? It's unbelievable. What has happened to so many in our nation? What's wrong with their thinking? If it's not Trump derangement, it's just upside down justice. It's injustice. Leftists who were part of the so-called resistance movement against President-elect Donald Trump in 2016 are now facing disillusionment with activism after the Republican won again this November. It says here, in a Sunday report titled "The Resistance Goes Quiet, Axios Aimed to Explain Why the Left Has Not Erupted into Widespread Protests like what occurred when Trump beat former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton 8 years ago. What's different? I mean, Axios was there telling us last time how they were going to steal it. They didn't get away with it this time. It was too big to rig. But where are the militiamen for the radical left? How come they didn't take to the streets? Time magazine, remember, after the steal, reported on how all of that was set, ready, and prepared to go. They had to have thought, well, we know so because they were saying it all the way up to the election. He's going to prison. He's going to prison for life. He's going to be financially destroyed. He's going to be made bankrupt. He's going to be assassinated. I mean, they even discussed that, hopefully, including images of Caesar and others that have been assassinated in history, encouraging the crazies among the radical left to carry out the unimaginable. And on July 13th, Thomas Crooks very nearly did. That's a name that everyone's going to soon forget because, well, Chris Wray and company, they've just buried it. They buried his social media footprint. They've buried everything about that kid. They buried the connections that he had to the deep state as well. And then the Secret Service and the FBI and all these agencies, they go quiet. They say, well, we can't reveal methods and sources. Chris Wray was just called before a hearing last week, and I forget who the other guy was over what agency, but basically they said, nope, can't do it. We're only going to do it classified behind closed doors. I mean, they're just basically coming out and saying, no, we're not going to be transparent. They don't want to expose themselves. They don't want to be on the hot seat listening to questions like the ones that Matt Gaetz fired at them over the years. So they're hiding. They're scurrying around like cockroaches when the light is switched on because they're being exposed. It says here, Lisa Mueller, a political science professor at McAllister College, said female Democrat voters are more disappointed than shocked this time around. So they didn't have the same acute trigger to rush to the barricades that they did the first time. They're just exhausted. Everyone's exhausted except Trump. How about that for a storyline? It says here, we've been through a Trump presidency before, so we have some sense of what it is that we anticipate and also some sense of what we need, quotes this one lady. We know that we need a bigger, more robust movement, which means that we have to be bringing in as many people as possible. We have lived, you know, forget about the Hitler stuff. We've lived through Trump before and, you know, we don't like it. But, you know, we'll get through this. That's what Milley said after calling him a fascist. That's what the Morning Meltdown is saying now after calling him Hitler. Hitler didn't get his pick last week, so he just chooses another one. This last bit from Axios I thought was interesting as well. Nothing captures the dramatic ideological transformation of the Republican Party more vividly than President-elect Trump's proposed cabinet. And it goes through pro-abortion Kennedy, pro-union centrist over labor, former elected Democrat, former George Soros advisor. It's just making the point that a lot of traditional Democrats are switching over to the Republican side and the Republican tent, as we've noted over and again. It's just becoming a bigger and more broad coalition, and one that's definitely not hardcore conservative. A lot of these appointments, even if their area of specialty, is pretty intriguing. Bobby Kennedy, you know, looking into the food industry, for example. And we'll get to some of those clips to finish off that segment that I got into last week. But there's just so much every day to work our way through. And as you know, this is the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. And we've only got 30 seconds left for today's show. So next time, sometime this week, by the way, we've got subs coming in Thursday and Friday for the Thanksgiving days off. I'll be here again tomorrow, and then also a bonus show of sorts on Wednesday. So we'll be here with you for the next 3 days, and then some very capable and wonderful subs thereafter. I'll cut it off there and leave you a little bit hanging, and we'll see you again tomorrow. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily.